Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, September 19, 2020. Midland unemployment continues its decline, by Mella McEwen. mmcewen@mrt.com. Midland unemployment continues to trend downward as the impact of the twin blows of the coronavirus pandemic and plunging oil and gas prices begins to ease. The Texas Workforce Commission reported Friday that August unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Midland and Martin counties, fell almost 1.5 points to 8.1% from 9.5% in July. The rate remains well above the 2.3% recorded last August. Midland unemployment peaked at 12.4% May as the pandemic-related economic shutdown and low oil prices took their toll on local jobs. Odessa also saw marked improvement in its unemployment rate, which fell to 11.1% from 12.7% in July. A year ago, Odessa's unemployment rate was 2.9%. Odessa, however, reported the state's highest unemployment for a third consecutive month. Commission figures show the improving labor market is being reflected in the civilian labor force, which jumped by almost 4,000 to 106,263 from 102,740 in July. Still, the labor force is 4,400 below the 110,710 reported last August. Of those in the labor force, there were about 4,700 additional people employed in August than in July, with the number of employed rising to 97,703 from 93,023 in July. The number of employed in the Midland MSA is 10,500 below last year's levels. The number of unemployed fell by 1,200 to 8,560 from 9,717 in July, but there are 6,000 more unemployed than at this time last year. Midland added 1,100 non-farm jobs from July to August for a total job count of 99,800, up from 98,700 in August, but 15,400 below the 115,200 jobs seen a year earlier. Midland's dominant industry sector, mining, logging, and construction, which incorporates oil and gas, continue to shed jobs, dropping 300 from July to August, the only industrial sector to lose jobs. The sector has been hard hit over the last year, losing 11,300 jobs from August 2019 to August 2020, a decline rate of 28%. Job gains were led by the professional and business services sector, which added 500 jobs from July to August, followed by the government sector, with 400 new jobs as schools began to prepare for the fall semester. Leisure and hospitality and trade, transportation and utilities sectors each added 200 jobs, and the financial activity sector added 100 jobs. The leisure and hospitality and the trade, transportation and utilities sectors have seen sharp job declines over the last year, losing 1,100 jobs and 1,600 jobs, respectively. Crude prices again are above $40 a barrel, by Mella McEwen. mmcewen@mrt.com. Oil prices enjoyed 4 days of gains on the New York Mercantile Exchange, their best showing since May. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 14 cents Friday to close at $41.11, well above the $37.26 at Monday's close. The week included Tuesday's $1.02 jump and Wednesday's $1.88 gain that put prices back above the $40 level. The posted price ended the week at $37.50 a barrel. Natural gas, which had ridden higher along with crude, lost significant momentum this week, starting with Wednesday's 9-cent loss and Thursday's 22-cent drop. These decreases sent prices near the $2 level. Natural gas ended the week at $2.05 per MCF, well below the $2.31 at Monday's close. Bloomberg reports that prices drew strong support from reports that Saudi Arabia has forcefully called for its fellow members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Producing Nations to adhere to production cuts they agreed to in an effort to support prices amid the oil demand destruction caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Meanwhile, the American Petroleum Institute reported continued signs that oil markets are rebalancing, though the market remains fragile. The industry association, in its monthly statistical report, said U.S. petroleum demand edged up to 18.3 million barrels a day amid further recovery for transportation fuels. Increased truck traffic due to increased business and industrial activity supported a 42% rise in diesel demand, coupled with a 1.5% rise in gasoline demand over July levels. Jet fuel deliveries remain down over 46% compared to the previous year. The U.S. also again became a net energy exporter in August, despite continued uncertainty over the pandemic and disruptions to Gulf of Mexico operations caused by Hurricane Laura. Crude and refined product imports fell 5.3% to 7.5 million barrels a day, and exports rose 2% to 7.8 million barrels a day. Of those 7.8 million barrels, 4.8 million barrels was refined products, which rose 1.9%, and 3 million barrels was crude, which was up 100,000 barrels a day and set a record for the month of August. While demand was rising, domestic crude and natural gas liquids each edged lower in August as drilling activity fell to its lowest level since November 2001. Though drilling productivity set record highs, total U.S. petroleum inventories, minus the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, rose 0.2% in August to 1.46 billion barrels, but the API reported crude oil stocks fell 3.2% to 502.8 million barrels, which is 6.6% below the previous record set in March 2017. Although the market remains fragile, we saw substantive progress in August towards the rebalancing and normalizing of key indicators, API Chief Economist Dean Foreman said in a press release. The U.S. return to net exporter status despite disruptions from Hurricane Laura is significant in that it shows a combination of resilience in international demand coupled with domestic refiners increasingly turning to domestic sweet crude, despite and in fact due to the pandemic-driven recession. Energy. Gas price drop in Midland doubles state average. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HurstMP.com. The average price of gas in Midland has dropped 12 cents in the past 2 weeks, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported this week that the average price fell another 6 cents and stands at $1.94 a gallon, which is the second highest average in the state, but is also within 8 cents of the state average and within 3 to 5 cents of a block of other larger metropolitan areas. The state's highest average, $1.97, is still in Odessa, where the price fell by state-leading 7 cents. The state average is $1.86 after a drop of 3 cents, half of the week-over-week decline experienced in Midland. AAA Texas reported this week in a press release that the average price for a gallon of regular unleaded in Texas dropped for the third week in a row, and that retail gas sales are down by 16% compared to this time last year, according to Oil Price Information Service. The organization also stated pump prices could continue to trend cheaper as winter blend gasoline is reintroduced into the market as early as this week. After the lowest summer gas price average for Texas drivers in 16 years, cheaper fuel continues to flow, even with tropical weather interrupting the oil and gas industry in the Gulf once again, stated AAA Texas spokesman Daniel Armbruster in the press release. Prices are dropping due to lower than normal gasoline demand as COVID-19 concerns remain and summer driving season is winding down. Across the region, other averages reported include $1.77 in Amarillo, a decrease of 7 cents, $1.81 in Lubbock, a decrease of 3 cents, $1.82 in Abilene, a decrease of 5 cents, $1.85 in San Angelo, a decrease of 2 cents, and $1.86 in El Paso, a decrease of 4 cents. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. they pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. The average price in Midland is 58 cents lower than it was 1 year ago. The average price across the state is 45 cents lower. The lowest average in the state is $1.71 in Sherman-Denison. This week, Odessa, $1.97. Midland, $1.94. College Station, Bryan, $1.91. Beaumont, Port Arthur, $1.90. Texarkana, $1.90. Wichita Falls, $1.90. State average, $1.86. National average, $2.18. Last week, Odessa, $2.04. Midland, $2. Texarkana, $1.94. Bryan College Station, $1.93. Corpus Christi, $1.93. State average, $1.89. National average, $2.21. Source, AAA Texas. Names and Faces. Out and About by Julie Donnelly. Comedian is guest speaker at Petroleum Club meeting. Comedian Debbie Childers was the guest speaker at the Petroleum Club Ladies Association's fall kickoff luncheon on August 25. Childers won the Gene Robertson Humor Competition winner in 2018. She was quick to give compliments to the oil and gas industry, even incorporating her personal usage of petroleum into her funny stories throughout her presentation. Her departing words were what she said her flight attendant told her on her way to Midland. Please take all your personal belongings and personal problems with you. The members, who hadn't met since February, dined on green salad topped with pecans, tangerines, tomatoes, and blue cheese crumbles, followed by basil and panko-crusted chicken breast with angel hair pasta and seasonal tomatoes. The new board was also announced. Audrey Curry, President, Lindsay Ballard, Vice President, Denise Porter, Past President, Mikkel Abney, Christy Brumfield, Janet Hansen, and Gayla Mabee. Two more deaths raised total during pandemic to 81. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. The City of Midland reported Friday another two Midland County residents have died because of coronavirus-related issues. The deaths are the third and fourth this week, and the 80th and 81st during the pandemic. Last week, there also were four deaths reported. The 80th patient is a male in his 70s who was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. He died on Monday. The 81st patient is a female in her 50s, who also was being treated at MMH and died on September 11. Both had underlying health conditions, according to the city. The Midland Health Department reported another 23 coronavirus cases Friday. The total raised the number of cases this week to 110, which was 31 higher than last week and 13 lower than the total from 2 weeks ago. Friday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Thursday, the Health Department reported. The Health Department also reported 1,116 active cases, an increase of 14 compared to Thursday, and 2,155 recovered, an increase of 7. Cases: Monday, 28, Tuesday, 26, Wednesday, 17, Thursday, 16, Friday, 23. Total this week, 110. Cases last week, 79. Weekly cases through September 5, 123. Cases during pandemic, 3,551. Nations and Texas' rig counts rise by one. Permian is down a rig to 123. By Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. The nation's rig count continues to inch its way back from historic lows reached last month as the COVID-19 pandemic wiped out crude oil demand and idled hundreds of rigs. Baker Hughes reported Friday that the national rig count rose 1 to 255 for the week, higher than the record low of 244 set in mid-August. A year earlier, there were 842 rigs at work nationwide, 602 more than at present. There were 179 rigs drilling for oil, down 1, and 73 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 2. Texas also added 1 rig for 106 rigs, still down 317 rigs from the 423 at work statewide a year ago. New Mexico lost 3 rigs to 43, while West Virginia and Louisiana joined Texas as the only producing states to add rigs, adding 1 rig each. the Permian Basin lost one rig to 123, down 294 from the 417 at work a year ago in the region that covers West Texas and southeastern New Mexico. Eddy County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian with 25 rigs, unchanged for the week. Martin County followed with 19 rigs, also unchanged for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, lost 3 rigs, the steepest decline among Permian Basin counties, to 18. Midland County had 15 rigs at work within county lines, unchanged from the previous week. Loving County reported 10 rigs, unchanged for the week.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, September 19th, 2020. Section A. BCCPB hosts City Candidate Forum. By Michael Merlot. Odessans attended a nearly three-hour City Council Candidate Forum Thursday night at the Floyd Gwynn Park Gymnasium. The event, hosted by the Black Chamber of Commerce of the Permian Basin, PCCPB, started at 6:30 p.m. with panelists questioning 12 candidates, either running for District 1, District 2, at-large, or mayor. The only candidate not present was District 2 candidate Stephen Thompson, who was reportedly out of town. District 2 candidate Rachel Miner attended. Questions ranged from what those running for city office thought of certificates of obligations, economic development, to whether they thought it was unfair that three of the four Black candidates were not invited to Wednesday's Ector County Republican Women's Club Luncheon and Forum. Prior to the forum, the Odessa branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, President Jean Collins, issued a press release complaint against the Ector County Republican Women's Club, stating that it intentionally and discriminately excluded four African-American candidates from participating. All candidates at the BCCPB forum said that the ECRW forum should have included all of the candidates. At-large candidate Denise Swanner said that it's in the club bylaws that if candidates did not vote in the 2016 election in the Republican Party, they were not to be invited. District 1 candidates were asked how they could help ensure that fiscal year 2021 allocations reach the district regarding infrastructure during the forum. Eddie Mitchell spoke about the south side of the gateway when answering the question. That's the gateway to our downtown, to our community. We have got to beautify that right there, not only Christmas, we need to beautify that the whole year. So when people passing through, they'll stop in our town and maybe we'll make more taxes that way, he said, adding that District 1 deserves their piece of the pie. Candidates were also asked about education. Tiki Davis spoke on making the city more attractive to educators and to bump up their salaries. I think cash is king, and the more you pay, the better education we can get for our kids. City Council members do not decide on local teacher pay or where schools are located. District 1 candidate Michael K. Shelton agreed, we need to get more qualified educators here, but we need to pay them qualified pay for qualified services. Mitchell expressed ideas to incorporate a third high school into the city because he said overcrowding is inhibiting learning amongst young Odessans. District 1 candidate Mark Mata spoke about a lack of communication between the city council and the citizens. It makes us feel left out, makes us feel that we're not a part of this city, he said, adding that transparency and having an open line of communication is key for the citizens. At-large candidate Latasha Gentry was asked about change and what she would hope to accomplish as a councilwoman. I feel like I bring a new voice and a perspective to the Odessa City Council. The changes I would like to make would be, we have a problem with drainage, she said, detailing that while some of the streets in Odessa flood, those issues should have been fixed years ago. Joanne Davenport Littleton spoke on leadership and the Odessa Police Department when asked how she could make the city better for all people. First thing I would do is meet with the chief of police and the mayor and the council. We've got to get our officers educated. We've got to bring them up to date on cultural and sensitivity training, she said. Swanner also said that she would meet with OPD to help bridge the gap between communities of color in Odessa and those policing them. Mayor David Turner spoke on how to bring people to Odessa when asked about tourism, saying that Odessa needs to continue to promote events like Juneteenth and the rodeo. He said that the chamber is working on more sports tournaments for kids. Mayoral candidates were the last to answer questions before the panel about taxes and certificates of obligation. Current District 2 Councilmember Dewey Bryant said that the city has problems and things that need to be addressed. We have a staff that's extremely intelligent and engineers. We also do outside studies. We make a conscientious effort. I believe we were elected to make decisions as mayoral and city council members, he said, adding that a certificate of obligation is a means of making those decisions. Gloria Apollinario said that her last resort would be to tax the citizens. Right now, with the pandemic, everyone is hurting, unemployed. If you go to the West Texas Food Bank, you will see it's not only the poor and the homeless who are waiting for those rations, but also there are families, the elderly, and single members, she said. Javier Joven said that he would not support certificates of obligation. Joven was also asked by a panel member what he would do to help improve the livelihood of people, especially people of color. I'm a person of color. When we help the community, people of color are helped. And one thing that we can do right now, immediately, let's open this thing up. Allow the restaurant owners to open up 100%. We're taxing them, he said, adding that the coronavirus will be here for the long run and that the best thing he felt could help Odessans is to just open up the economy. Orthopedics by Michael Merlot. While Medical Center Hospital scaled back on some elective surgeries in March due to COVID-19, MCH orthopedic surgeon Dr. Vijay Bora said Friday that patients no longer have to wait for elective orthopedic procedures. It is very, very safe to get elective surgery, orthopedic surgery, joint replacements, carpal tunnel release, or anything elected. Bora said that when MCH shut down electives, they were still trying to help patients out by conducting steroid injections or other injections to help nurse patients along until they could do surgeries. He added that many patients have had to push back their planned procedures and some missed out after losing their jobs and insurance coverage for their surgeries. That's a big chunk of patients, unfortunately. The oil field going down, they lost their jobs and they wanted to get the knee replacement before their insurance ran out. And now, even though we've restarted, some of them don't have the benefits, so that's been a big hit as well. To combat the spread of COVID-19, Bora spoke about precautions that the hospital has put in place. There's a universal mask policy, and we're doing spinal anesthesia where no one is intubated. People are made numb from the waist down, he said, noting that MCH also has a rapid recovery joint care program to help patients get walking the next day or sometimes even the same day. Most patients are walking within a few hours, Bora said. There are temperature checks on all our staff on a daily basis as well, he said, detailing that there is a staff dedicated to direct patients, whether for in-home patient therapy or outpatient physical therapy, to help with the transition. The orthopedic program is now back in full swing, Bora said. We have a fully staffed total joint care center that includes nurses, physical therapists, occupational therapists, everyone to help the patient's post-operative recovery. MCH gets a lot of referrals for redo surgeries where knees or hips installed 10 to 20 years ago have failed and need to be redone urgently, Bora said. Unfortunately, we've had to put them off, so there's a lot of people who've gone through a lot of pain and suffering because of not being able to get the surgery they needed, but I'm glad we're restarted, and I think it's very safe. MCH orthopedic hand surgeon Dr. Daniel Babel started work in March and said that although some procedures have been locked down, he's now been getting patients from out of town. I just finished a case on somebody who was rather complicated. They weren't able to get what they needed in a different city, so they came here, he said. People need help because everything is slow. We've got lots of capabilities to get everything taken care of quickly. While Babel does complex surgeries in the hospital, he also performs multiple procedures that can be done in the office at the ProCare Orthopedics and Rehabilitation Center, like carpal tunnel releases and ganglion cysts, while the patient is awake for the removal. Historically, people get freaked out thinking carpal tunnel. They remember the big surgeries, the big incisions, staying in the hospital, and now, as things have progressed, it's becoming more standard in care around the country to do those that we can in the office. It saves people money. It saves them having to go to the hospital and all the extra stuff that goes along with that, he said. Divisional Director Trapper O'Donnell said that with in-office visits, people will be going home the same day, which can help because there are hospital stay charges. O'Donnell added that they are COVID-19 testing patients prior to having surgery, as well as including swab tests and antibody tests. Local news roundup. Business grant applications. The City of Odessa is currently accepting applications for the Business Assistance Program, $2,500 to $10,000 grants for small businesses financially impacted by COVID-19. For application or more information, call 335-4107 or visit www.odessa-tx.gov/COBAP. Art contest. The Odessa American is conducting a contest for artists who can draw a cartoon cover for our football wrap each week for Odessa High and Permian High. One artwork will be selected each week. At the end of the season, a gift card will be awarded to the overall winner. To submit your artwork or for more information, email terry@oaoa.com. Man charged with sexually assaulting stepdaughter. A 22-year-old woman reportedly told the Ector County Sheriff's Office that she was sexually assaulted when she was younger by her then stepfather. Mario Diaz, 46, was charged with continuous sexual abuse of a child, a first-degree felony. The woman reported sexual assaults happened between January 1, 2009 to December 31, 2011, to ECSO at 10:53 a.m. June 24th, the ECSO affidavit detailed. The woman reportedly detailed to deputies the first time Diaz sexually assaulted her was in January of 2009 while she was sleeping in her bedroom. The woman stated her mother was at work and Diaz went into her bedroom and crawled into bed with her. The woman continued that Diaz touched her inappropriately underneath her clothing, the affidavit stated. She stated during the sexual assaults she was scared and pretended to stay asleep. The woman reportedly told deputies that during January of 2012, her mom caught Diaz trying to get into the bed of her younger sister while he was naked. The woman stated her mom divorced Diaz shortly after, which ended the sexual abuse. Diaz was contacted but refused to speak with ECSO investigators, the affidavit stated. He was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Thursday, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $50,000 and was still in custody as of Friday afternoon. Police searching for 16-year-old boy. The Odessa Police Department reportedly needs help finding a 16-year-old runaway boy who was last seen in June. OPD is looking for Calvin Boyle as the incident is being investigated as a runaway. Boyle was last seen at 10 a.m. June 26th. In the 6400 block of Opal Drive, the press release stated. He is 5'8" and weighs 235 pounds. OPD detailed in the press release that harboring a runaway is a Class A misdemeanor, which has punishment of up to $4,000 and up to a year in jail. Anyone with information about Boyle is asked to contact the Odessa Police Department at 432-335-3333 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. ORMC open for elective procedures. With Governor Greg Abbott announcing the easing of statewide restrictions on elective procedures, Odessa Regional Medical Center, ORMC, says this is good news for patients who had to postpone certain procedures due to the precautions. ORMC said its clinics are open, elective procedures are ready to be scheduled, and the emergency room continues to be a safe place to treat all emergencies, a news release said. The release said the hospital is working quickly to reschedule previously canceled procedures. To ensure the safety of patients and to provide a safe and clean environment for any visit to its facilities, they are intensely focused on new cleaning protocols and personal protection procedures to keep patients safe. They have also implemented new practices to ensure that any COVID-related care is done in an isolated area away from other patients and their families. The current no-visitor policy will remain in place with the following exceptions, effective Monday. Exceptions include end-of-life patients. There may be one visitor at a time limited to immediate family only. Other visitors must remain outside the facility until rotated in. Pediatric patients. No more than two designated visitors per hospital stay. Laboring or postpartum patients. One designated visitor, labor partner per hospital stay. No time limits. Ambulatory same-day surgery, ASU, procedure patients. One designated visitor per hospital stay. The visitor must stay only in the assigned patient's area. The visitor must wait outside the facility during the procedure. The visitor will be called back in once the patient is out of the procedure and back in ASU area. No time limits. Emergency room patients. One designated visitor per hospital stay. The visitor must stay only in the assigned patient's room. The visitor must wait outside the facility until patient is assigned a room. The visitor cannot wait in the waiting area. Limitations to patients under investigation for COVID will be determined on a case-by-case basis. No time limits. Other special circumstances not defined above must be reviewed on a case-by-case basis with administration senior manager. Visitors to COVID patient rooms must don full PPE and stay 6 feet away from the patient. ECISD Live centers on supporting virtual learning by Ruth Campbell. Creating a schedule and a routine and communicating with the schools your children go to if your child is having academic or social emotional difficulties are some keys to learning in the virtual world. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray hosted an ECISD live event Thursday night featuring Downing Elementary Principal Marcos Lopez, Lorna Lynn De Leon, science teacher at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, Angela Hodge, avid teacher at Nimitz Middle School, and Kristen DeShazo, a second grade teacher at San Jacinto Elementary School. The decision focused on supporting students learning online during the COVID-19 pandemic. With the secondary school grading period just ended, Murray said some students may have struggled to turn in assignments at the middle and high school level. Parents will see how their students have done as of September 18th. Elementary students still have another couple of weeks until their grading period ends. Printed versions of report cards will be sent home for secondary students next Friday, Murray said. He added that if parents see something of concern, he encourages them to have a good and healthy conversation with their child to better understand what their problems might be. Lopez said virtual learning has been challenging for those at home and those at school. We've had to work through communication and technology. For the most part, parents are willing to work with us and always giving us that grace. We want to thank you for doing that because it's very important. We appreciate the partnership we have with them, the parents, Lopez said. DeShazo said one of the most important things parents can do to support their students learning virtually is creating a space for learning and a schedule. We have provided schedules for what we think online learning can look like at home, DeShazo said. As teachers giving live lessons, DeShazo added that it's important that students log in so they can communicate with their teachers. Hodge said she would add organization as an ingredient to online learning success. That includes schedule, routines, and organizing time, materials, and learning. Organizing materials enables students to know when class starts and the materials needed for each class, Hodge said. It was noted that sometimes middle school students say they don't need help, but Hodge said parents should set up expectations for what their child should accomplish, such as being out of bed, getting dressed, and being appropriate at all times. Parents can monitor their child's work on ECISD's parent portal. De Leon said having a designated place in the home for a high school student to work is important because the higher they go, the more specific the lessons become. NTO also uses Echo as a platform to post class schedules, calendars, and assignments, for example, so parents and students can see what's coming up. Lopez said he hears from parents frustrated with the platforms they use, connecting with teachers or internet connections. Lopez said he encourages parents to communicate with their children's teacher. Every campus has some level of texting, he said. For Downing, Class Dojo is used. Every teacher has an email, and Google Meet has a chat box feature. Teachers also don't have a problem providing their classroom phone number, he said. Lopez also suggested that a space be carved out for learning for students learning at home because there may be distractions. Teacher emails are the teacher's first and last name with a period in between and ectorcountyisd.org after that. So for DeShazo, it would be kristen.deshazo@ectorcountyisd.org. DeShazo said parents should reach out to teachers if their student is having a hard time completing their work, for instance. We're here to offer support, she said. We're ready and willing to help parents. It's very important that communication is occurring, especially because we're communicating through a computer screen. Sometimes a younger child can't communicate over a computer screen. DeShazo says she has time set aside in her schedule that she calls response to intervention, where she sets up small groups so students can catch up. She added that there may be other students who need more work. Murray said more work doesn't necessarily mean more math problems, but it likely means more rigor. We always have something up our sleeve to extend our minds, DeShazo said. Lopez said for students having academic or social-emotional issues, parents should contact the school. Teachers have emails and can be reached by calling the school and apps such as Seesaw and Remind that some teachers use. Parents can also come to their students' campus, Lopez said. He added that there are counselors on campus even at the elementary level. When students are learning at home, Lopez said it's important that they be told they're doing a good job. This is new to everybody. ECISD is kind of leading the way right now on what it could look like, Lopez said. He added that he wants to tell parents that they are doing a good job, too. De Leon said NTO is encouraging celebration of small victories as they go. Hodge expressed thanks to all the parents who have supported her personally. I love you, and I just want to let all the parents know we're here for your students, and we're here for you. We can't do this without you. We are a family, okay? We are a family, but we can't do this alone, Hodge said.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. Section A. Education. New interim superintendent seeks answers. Ann Dixon says she will be happy asking why. By Stuart Doreen, Doreen, at hurstnp.com. Midland ISD President Rick Davis said the district didn't need an interim superintendent who is just a caretaker. District leaders expect the right person can make an impact, he said, even if they are here months and not years. A caretaker position, as it turns out, wasn't what Ann Dixon sought when she applied for the position, not when there are decisions to be made. Dixon has become an interim superintendent specialist, going into jobs for months at a time. Her resume shows Midland ISD will be the 22nd interim or consulting superintendent position she's held since 1999. But this straight-talking educator, whose permanent residence is located outside Fredericksburg, knows the situation she has signed up for in Midland and knows that solutions are needed. And in the case of Midland, we need to look at what's happening with academics, Dixon said last week in a phone interview. And so that's going to be the focus. Midland ISD's academic issues have been at least a decade in the making, something Dixon said she knows, as her interview with Midland ISD leaders included a visual that showed an academic performance chart from 2012 and the question, why? Why? Is a legitimate question when it comes to the district's downturn in academic achievement. There are many others that many in the community have raised, said Dixon, who starts in the position on Monday. Why was there a drop in academic performance when that was so great that it put Midland ISD on the radar of the Texas Education Agency? Why are the bumps or periods of improvement so small and then followed by periods when the performance returns to what it had been before? Why did the number of failing schools grow in 2019 from 4 to 9? Why are there so many schools that have failed for so long that it has required replacing leadership, emptying out a school's population, changing the name, or even having legislation created that allowed the district to turn over 2 schools to third parties to run as in district charters? So I want to get in there and I want to really look at that. I want to diagnose, Dixon said. If I have cancer and don't know where the cancer is or what the treatment is, it really doesn't matter if I know I have cancer. Dixon's comments about how she plans to diagnose the problem start with another question. How? And to that, her comments are equally as direct. I can scare people when I say there's not one single child educated in the district office. Dixon said she is a 10,000% supporter of the classroom and the principal. That is where it's all happening. If I can't figure out what's happening in the schools, it doesn't matter what's happening anywhere else. And that's where your resources need to be, That's where your staff needs to be. And that's why where my exploration is going to start. I'm going to go straight to the principal and say, what do you need for your kids to be successful? When asked about Lone Star governance and the system of great schools, Dixon said she's not a big program person, as the programs ultimately do the same thing. Also, if one was doing all these things that these programs profess to do, there would be success. That brings her back to the question why, as in, why are we not improved? That is what I'm going to ask these people. Why? Why? Dixon will make $22,000 a month in salary, which is less than the district's current superintendent. The district also will provide a vehicle and reimburse her for gas. The district will pay for her housing and provide $20 a day for out-of-pocket expenses. The employment agreement goes to the heart of what makes Dixon her own individual. First, it is an employment agreement and not a standard contract. If she wants to terminate the agreement at any time, she can do so, as long as she provides 2 weeks' notice. The same is true if the district wants to terminate the agreement. She told the Reporter-Telegram that she doesn't envision being in the district through the end of the school year, as district leaders had hoped. Her resume shows that. Since 2010, her average stay at the district is just more than 5 months. She plans to work and is committed to be in Midland until the district has found its next superintendent. However, she wants the district committed to start that process. In fact, Mr. Davis actually asked me that question the other night, Dixon said. He said, checking with your references, every person said don't bother to ask her to stay because she'll tell you no. That's non-negotiable with her. And that is true. In fact, I haven't even committed to the end of this year. Dixon was open about crossing paths again with outgoing Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick. She said she was the interim superintendent at Cedar Hill ISD before his arrival there, and she comes to Midland as the district continues termination proceedings with him. Dixon said it was with Cedar Hill Board that Riddick, it was the Cedar Hill Board that hired Riddick and not her, and that she doesn't think she has spoken with Riddick, maybe with the exception at a conference in about 3 years. But today, even with an upper executive staff that was hired exclusively by Riddick, Dixon starts the process of bringing back Midland ISD. She said MISD has the programs and the resources. I don't like to say schools fail. I know that everything else says that, and I don't like to say kids fail. We fail. The people making those decisions are the ones who have failed. And so I want to find out who's failing and what changes do there have to be made. Now, saying that and saying that to you, because the recorder's probably back on, then people are going to feel like they've been put on notice. And if that's what it takes, then that's what we're going to do. I need accountability. If our math scores have declined or dropped or whatever, I'm going to the secondary executive director, and I'm going to talk to the math consultants, and I'm going to talk to the math coaches, and I'm going to tell them, these are your scores, so what happens? And if they don't know, then I don't have the right people, do I? Like I said, people will not like me because my why, I am here to listen. I'm not here to judge. But I want you to explain to me why this has or has not happened. Economy. Local jobless rate falls to 8.1% by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. More Midlanders are returning to work as businesses continue reopening following the COVID-19-related economic shutdown, and the region's oil and gas industry is beginning to show signs of life. According to the Texas Workforce Commission, August unemployment in its metropolitan statistical area for Midland, which includes Midland and Martin counties, fell almost 1.5 points to 8.1%. The rate remains well above the 2.3% recorded last August. Midland unemployment peaked at 12.4% in May as the pandemic-related economic shutdown and low oil prices took their toll on local jobs. Odessa also saw a marked improvement in its unemployment rate, which fell to 11% from 12.7% in July. A year ago, Odessa's employment rate was 3. Odessa, however, reported the state's highest unemployment for a third consecutive month. It's amazing what 1 year can do, said Willie Taylor, chief executive officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin office. We've gone from the lowest unemployment to some of the highest, really because of the oil and gas industry. Taylor said in a phone interview that if Midland and Odessa slide toward the bottom of the list of 26 MSAs, makes one point, it's diversification. We need to diversify this region. We need to increase manufacturing, for example, or health care. Even so, the region has managed to hold steady during the downturn in terms of the civilian labor force and wages, Taylor said. I'm not necessarily seeing or hearing about wages dropping, and that's good. The number of Permian Basin residents filing for unemployment insurance is dropping, Taylor said, averaging about 1,100 a month, down from a peak of March, April, and May. From October 2019 to August 2020, 40,000 people in this region have filed for unemployment. At some point, people need to be aware their unemployment benefits will run out, and that is one reason he urges everyone to take advantage of job training opportunities. We know some of these jobs are not coming back. Some of these companies have closed permanently. Don't wait 1 or 2 months until unemployment runs out to take action. Plan your future. Know if you want a career in the medical field or education, trucking, HVAC, welding, machinery. Plan on going to Midland College, Odessa College, Howard College. Workforce training funding is out there. Take advantage of it. And despite the losses, Taylor said that Midland and Odessa's combined labor force of 194,000 puts it in the top 10 MSAs statewide. Commission figures show the improving labor market is being reflected in the civilian labor force, which jumped by almost 4,000 in July. Still, the labor force is 4,400 below what was reported last August. Of those in the labor force, there were about 4,700 more employed in August than in July. Even so, the number of employed in the Midland MSA is 10,500 below last year's levels. Midland added 1,100 non-farm jobs from July to August for a total job count of 99,800. Midland's dominant industry sector, mining, logging, construction, which incorporates oil and gas, continued to shed jobs, dropping 300 from July to August. It's the only industrial sector to lose jobs. The sector has been hard hit over the last year with a decline rate of 28%. Job gains were led by the professional and business service sector, which added 500 jobs from July to August, followed by the government sector with 400 new jobs as schools began to prepare for the fall semester. Leisure and hospitality and trade, transportation, and utilities sectors each added 200 jobs, and the financial activity sector added 100 jobs. Leisure and hospitality and trade, transportation, and utilities have seen sharp declines over the last year. The only two industrial sectors to add jobs were professional and business services with 300 jobs and the government sector with 200. Statewide, the unemployment rate dropped to 6.8%, the fourth consecutive decline and lowest rate since March. Amarillo reported the lowest unemployment in August, followed by College Station Bryan and Abilene.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. Section A. Three teens dead in fatal crash. A late-night wreck claimed the lives of three Odessa teens. Odessa police are investigating the fatal crash that took place in North Odessa Saturday morning, a news release from the Odessa Police Department detailed. Three people died, while two are in critical condition following the major crash that occurred at around 2:55 a.m. The Odessa Police and Odessa Fire Rescue were called to 52nd and Clover about the major crash. The release detailed that a gray GMC Terrain was being operated by Andrew Nading, 19, of Odessa, and traveling eastbound in the 1400 block of East 52nd. The front passenger of the GMC Terrain has been identified as Benjamin Luna, 19, of Odessa. a white Ford F-150 operated by Kanan Garms, 19, of Odessa, was traveling northbound in the 5100 block of Clover. The front passenger of the Ford F-150 was identified as Demorion Bro, 18, of Odessa. The back passenger of the Ford F-150 was identified as 18-year-old Evan Hill of Odessa. An investigation revealed that the driver of the F-150 ran a stop sign before colliding with the GMC Terrain. Garms and the back passenger of the Ford F-150 were pronounced dead on the scene. Nading was transported to a local hospital and later pronounced dead by medical personnel. Bro and Luna were transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. There were no reports of any other injuries. Local news roundup. DACA online informational session. The Midland College Cogdell Learning Center, Casa de Amigos, Leyva Law Firm, PLLC, and the University of Texas Permian Basin will present an online information session for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, applicants. The event will be held from 7 to 8 p.m. Tuesday. This DACA session is a community outreach designed to educate the public on the current immigration policies and its implications for the youth in our community, their parents, and families. The event is free and no registration is required. To join by computer or smartphone, https://globalpage-prod.webex.com/join. The WebEx meeting number access code is 146-122-6010, and the meeting password is DACA2020. To join by phone, no video, just audio, call 469-210-7159 or 720-650-7664. For more information, contact the Midland College Learning Center, 201 West Florida, Midland, or email cogdell@midland.edu or 432-684-4100. Back the Blue Fundraiser and Fun Fair. The Ector County Republicans has scheduled a Back the Blue Fundraiser and Fun Fair Saturday at ECR headquarters, 707 North Jefferson. Pancake breakfast will take place from 9 to 11 a.m. Cost is $10 per person and free for kids under the age of 8 and all law enforcement and first responders and their spouses and children. All proceeds will benefit the Odessa Police Department and Ector County Sheriff's Department. The Family Fun Fair will take place from 4 to 8 p.m. There will be jumpers, games, celebrity dunking booth, food trucks, antique cars, and meet the OPD OFD ECSO officers. Visit www.facebook.com/Ector County GOP. Community Service Hours Cleanup. The Odessa Teen Court will be meeting to clean up the newest lot adopted through Keep Odessa Beautiful from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday west of Hayes Elementary, 1101 East Monahans. This is a great opportunity for those who need to complete their community service hours. Bring a friend or family member and have your hours doubled. Water will be provided by OTC. Beautiful will provide gloves and trash bags. For 53352 or email rgrisham@odessa-tx.gov.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.